First of all, I'd like to dedicate this discussion to my father, because tonight's the last night of Shloshim after his era. And he was very strong in the specific areas that I'd like to speak about now. We spoke last time we met about the idea of trying to do a thing in such a way that you become a different human being. We try to talk about the idea of tshuva from the aspect of not just being sorry about what you did, but being so sorry, that means going back to the point at which you were before you did that thing and regaining that consciousness, and maybe even more, which means a complete reformation of what you are as a human being. That's why we said that the judgment could be favorable. That means when you stand ready for Rosh Hashanah, you might have very negative things that you did, you would be able to stand up to that judgment, even if the consequence of those actions remains in the world, but because you're not the same person anymore. So they can't pin it on you because you changed what you were. Which means that the work of tshuva is to completely reform what you are. It's not just to be the same person with a new aspect, a regret about something, or a new consciousness. The concept of being Jewish, we said before, being human at a certain level also, is to reform what you are, not from the core of your being. Now, let's try and look at this idea from the point of view of avoda, of mitzvahs. Right? Not only tshuva. Let's try and look at what a person can approach the world with when you set out to do mitzvahs, or to develop yourself in general, not only by correcting what you did before, but by positive action you're about to make in the future. How do we relate to mitzvahs? What does it mean? And when we talk about our development in terms of mitzvahs, what we're talking about is the next world. But then I want to speak about it for the reason that I mentioned before. What we're talking about is the next world, because the Jewish concept of the next world, the reward of the next world, the experience of the next world, is what you become. Our concept of the next world is not that it's a place where you go, where nice things happen, or where you get an external, extrinsic reward. Our concept of the next world is that it's a raw, naked experience of just yourself. There's an amazing mystical statement in Chazal that says that in the next world everybody's alone. That means, what it means is this. You'll find statements to the contrary also. You'll find it says that husband and wife form a unit in the next world. You'll find statements to other effects also. But the dimension of being alone in the next world means that you experience specifically what you became. The work that you did on yourself, you could put it crudely as being that the experience of the next world is the percentage increase that you made on the raw material you were given. And we've discussed this idea before. When you're given raw material, that means certain kind of personality, certain looks, certain financial kind of status in general, certain type of background, parents, certain opportunities presented themselves to you in life, you don't get any credit for those things. But they were free handouts. The fact that you had certain advantages in certain areas. Right? Even if you used those things reasonably well. But there's no reward for that in the next world, because that's what you are given. When a father sends his son out into the world to make his fortune, and he gives him a certain sum of money with which to make his fortune, if the son comes back after a long time with exactly the same sum of money, there's no reward for having that sum of money. That's what you were given. The reward, that what makes the father happy, that is what is the percentage increase, what the son managed to manipulate and maneuver in the world with what he was given. The Jewish concept of the next world is not the total sum. It's not what you were given plus what you made of it. The entire experience of the next world is only what you made. It's only the profits, only the percentage increase that you made. You get stripped away of all the raw material. The raw material you were given, you were only given as a vehicle for the power to generate what you became. But you can only claim reward for what you made of yourself. You can't claim reward for that which you were given. That's clear. So our idea of the next world is that it's a direct, tangible experience of what you did to yourself in this world. Everything that you built in yourself, so that you experience in the next world, not in the most critical and acute way. And everything you damaged in yourself, you suffer the pain of that in the next world. Not a punishment, it's just you.
We talk about schar v'onesh as if it's reward and punishment, but the mystical writings say quite clearly that it's not reward and punishment, it's just a natural consequence. If you damage your body, then you feel the pain and you lack the limb or the organ or the part that you damaged. You're not a punishment. It's the consequence of what you did. So in the next world, if you spent your life in this world doing certain damage to certain parts of the neshama, so the consequence in the next world is that you don't have bowels and you feel them bleeding. And conversely, if a person spent his existence in this world building himself, then what he experiences in the next world is simply the work that he did. The pleasure is the muscles, the spiritual muscles that he built through the effort that he put in. Now, we discussed these things before. There's nothing new about that. That's the Jewish concept of the next world. Now, let's look tonight more deeply. Now, there's some very difficult and deep ideas here. They take a lot of thinking and a lot of sorting out. But let's look at some of them and do our best to try and sort out a few ideas and try and grasp at where we're supposed to reform ourselves, Rosh Hashanah, where we're supposed to become something new in this context. Now, the first problem is this. According to what I've said up to now, it follows logically that the reward for mitzvah is only in the next world. There can't be any reward for a mitzvah in this world. Because the definition of this world is the place where you work in order to generate what you become, and what you become is the reward. Right? So there's no reward here. The reward comes at the end when the job's been done. That's clear. Secondly, there's another much deeper reason why there can be no reward for a mitzvah in this world. And that's a well-known statement in Chazal that says, Schar mitzvah v'hai al malaika. There's no reward for a mitzvah in this world. And the deeper understanding of why there can be no reward for a mitzvah in this world is as follows. The concept of a mitzvah, you have to hear well now, everything we're saying is one idea. The concept of a mitzvah is that it's an exercise in transcendent living. It's an exercise in elevating oneself into the transcendent world. It's not a technical action that you do. You're commanded to do X and you do X. That's not the idea of a mitzvah. I mean, obviously you need the bones of it, the skeleton of it. You have to do the action as you commanded. But the concept that we have behind the mitzvah, that it's a homework exercise in self-development, which means in transcendence. Every time you do a mitzvah and you grow to a new level, you transcend the physical. You actually change the givens. You change who you are. That transcendent level is what we call the next world. Which means that the very concept of a mitzvah is only relevant, the reward, the consequence of it, is only relevant in a transcendent world. Let's put it more crudely, in case you're not with me. More graphically. When you do a mitzvah, you do something of infinite connections. You do something that touches the infinite core. So by definition, you can't be paid out in a finite world. This world just isn't big enough to be paid out for something that you do that transcends what this world is. Let's make it even more graphic. Someone once gave the following marshal. He said this. He said, the reward for a mitzvah is like the situation of trying to expect reward for a mitzvah in this world is the following thing. It's like a person who has a check, let's say for 10,000 rands, and he's traveling through the Karoo. So he stops at a little town, where the whole town is one little store, one little shop, where there's a post office and the local restaurants, everything, the whole town's contained in that one little place, and he wants to buy a drink. So the only money he has is a check for 10,000. So he goes into the chap on the counter and he asks him if he could please change this so he could buy a drink. The chap says, very son, never seen that much money together in his life. He says, when you get to where you're going, there you go into any bank, they'll change that immediately on the spot. But here he says, that's what a mitzvah is in this world. The tiniest mitzvah is like carrying a check that they can't cash here. They don't have the currency over here, since the total span of this world is finite, no matter how big it is, if they would give you the total span of what this world is, but it doesn't begin to get into the league of what one tiny, tiny mitzvah is worth, because the tiniest mitzvah touches into the infinite. So they can't pay you in this world, they don't want to, but if they tried, they couldn't fit it into this world. Now, it says, some places it says, that if a person would imagine, let's say a person did a small mitzvah, a few cents given to the place where a person has to give a few cents, let's say, or a smile at the right time to somebody who needs it. That's the smallest mitzvah you can imagine, with the least effort possible. if they would give you all the pleasure that any human had ever experienced, right? Every human, since the creation until the coming of the Mashiach, right? The most intense pleasure that every human has ever experienced and would ever experience, all in one instant, and that degree of intensity of pleasure they prolong for eternity, right? For the whole of this world, for the whole of your life in this world, it wouldn't begin to approach what you deserve, right? For the tiniest mitzvah. Now, we'll try and understand this more fully later, but let's look at it as follows. If that's true, then the problem is this. You with me? You're clear so far? The problem is this, that you find a number of places in Chazal where it talks about a reward in this world. It talks about the giving reward in this world. So how do you understand that? And I'll give you two examples which we'll try and understand. One is, the Rambam mentions the fact that it says that plenty of times in the Torah, no less a source than the Chumash itself, that if you observe my commandments and you live the way I want you to, you'll have rain and season, and your crops will grow, and your possessions will be blessed, and there'll be no wars, there'll be peace. You'll have tremendous physical bracha in this world. And if you don't, you'll have punishment in this world. Well, you couldn't find a clearer statement of reward for mitzvahs, for living the way Hashem wants us to in this world. First problem. The second problem is, a remarkable statement in Chazal says this, that there's certain mitzvahs that says, she'adam oichel peruseyim ba'olam hazeh, va'keren kayemes lo'olam haba. That you eat the fruits, you benefit from the fruits of the mitzvah in this world, but the core of the mitzvah, the capital, remains untouched for the next world. Which means that it says openly that there are some mitzvahs that you get rewarded for in this world and the next, but it says clearly you get rewarded here. And if you look carefully at that list of mitzvahs, you'll find it's fascinating. Because it's a list that we start every morning in the davening, before we begin, right? Before the Pesukah de Zimra, we say this, we quote this Chazal. And if you look carefully, you'll see that it's an unusual list of mitzvahs. It's mitzvahs that are between man and man, not mitzvahs between man and God. The last one is Talmud Torah. Can I get Kulam? Learning Torah is against all, which has all the degrees of every kind of mitzvah. And if we get time, I don't know if we'll have time tonight to speak about that. But the rest of the list, if you examine it carefully, you'll see that it goes around mitzvahs that are between man and man. Which means that we are told that there's a reward for doing things, mitzvahs, between you and your fellow man, which you experience in the next world, which we can understand, but also you get a reward in this world. How do we understand that? How do we understand that? And further complicating the problem is the fact that every mitzvah between man and man is really a mitzvah between man and Hashem. Because when you do something because Hashem tells you, it doesn't make any difference if it's shaking a lulav or giving your friend something he needs. You both of them are commandments of Hashem. So what's this difference? You with me? These are some of the problems. Now, let's try and understand. So the Rambam answers the first problem and he says the following thing. Now, these are fundamentals of Torah belief. The Rambam includes them in the beginning of his great work, which deals with the Jews' approach to the world. That you can't be Jewish without having some approach to these issues. You have to understand. That's the fundamental difference if you get paid out in this world or the next. Now let's understand. The Rambam says this, and this we've discussed before in one or two other contexts. Let's understand it again and more deeply. Rambam says, quite clearly at great length, that a reward in this world for doing a mitzvah is for a very, very specific purpose and reason. And it's as follows. It's not a reward at all. When Hashem says that if you do my mitzvahs and you live up to the Torah, I'll give you this and this and this, it's not a reward at all. Because as we said before, it can't give you a reward in this world. It's only an expense account. Rambam explains that what it means is not a reward. The Torah doesn't say this is your reward. The Torah says that if you do these things, you live correctly, I will make it possible for you to continue living correctly. You know? If you show that that's what you want, so then I'll give you everything you need, peace and prosperity, everything you need in order to be able to carry on living in that way. Right? And of course it makes a lot of sense. If the boss commands, the boss wants his worker to do a certain thing, and the worker's doing the job, so why withhold the goods? He's going to give him everything he needs to do the job. But on the other hand, if the worker is slacking off but he's not doing the job, so then he's not going to spend, he's not going to lay out. Well, again, to make it graphic and crude, it's exactly like a business where someone's sent out to do a job and they give him a rich expense account. They don't mind paying the expense account if the employee stays at the best hotels. So they don't mind paying for him to stay at the best hotels if he's making the deals. If he's bringing home at a good deal more than the expense account they're forking out for him, so they'll keep paying the expense account. It makes a lot of sense. But they're going to get upset if the chap's staying at the best hotels, drinking the best champagne, and he's not making any deals. So the concept is that what you get in this world is just an expense account. The Chofetz Chaim used to say, we've mentioned this also on Sunday night, the Chofetz Chaim used to say that it's a very good reason to live simply in this world. Because the less you cost them over here, the less you cost Hashem over here, the more likely is to put up with the fact that you're not bringing on the goods. But if you're living richly over here, and you're not turning out much of the goods in spiritual terms, you just don't pay. The Chofetz Chaim himself used to live very, very simply, and he used to explain that his attitude was that he was worried if he was bringing home the goods that he had to bring home. And he wouldn't want to take too much out of the world because you have to pay it back. You get given it as an expense account if you're going to make it pay. But if you don't make it pay, you have to pay. And there's nothing free. The world's based on din, like we tried to explain last night. Just you get a bit of credit now and then. But the basic underlying thing is the strict accounting. Now, that's the first understanding that we have, which means this, again, that when it talks about reward in this world, it's not reward. It's simply the wherewithal to continue doing what you do. But the reward for that, right? Just exactly like the person who's making all the deals, he gets the expense account in this world, but they pay him a salary at the end. They pay him even a commission. They might give him a large bonus if he brings home, right, the right kind of deal. But it's got nothing to do with what they spend on him. They don't dock that from his salary at the end. The company's only too happy to pay the expenses if he makes it worth their while. So that's the first understanding of what it means when it talks about a reward in this world. It means that there's no reward in this world, but it's only the ability, a gift of the ability to continue. Now, the next part's much harder. Yeah? Emotion. Much harder. And that's this. To earn that in this world, we understand. It means to be able to be given the credit or the expenses to continue, we understand. But to deserve the reward in the next world, to earn that, there are a few difficult catches. There's one basic difficult catch. That's as follows. The whole understanding of being paid out in the next world is because the mitzvah belongs in the next world. Since the mitzvah is a transcendent entity, it's a spiritual creature. In the mystical writings, it talks about mitzvahs being created beings, right, that live in the spiritual world. And they defend you when the time comes. They speak for you. Certain transcendent creatures, that's what you build, you create. You actually sow the genes of these creatures when you do a mitzvah. But since that creature lives only in the transcendent dimension, you can't see him here, what follows is this. What happens when a person does a mitzvah for benefit in this world? What happens when a person does a mitzvah? Does a mitzvah, Hashem commands him. But he does it because of a benefit here. He'll be respected. Be wealthy. Make a better business because he'll fit into the right circle and people will accept him. Or because he likes that way of living. Or it's more aesthetic. Or it makes more sense to him. There are all kinds of reasons that people do mitzvahs that are not for a transcendent purpose beyond the self. But they're for the self. You can do a mitzvah very selfishly. Now, we'll see later that you can do something for your friend very selfishly also. But even a mitzvah between you and Hashem, you can do totally self-motivated. How much reward, how much of the mitzvah is left in the next world if you do the mitzvah for this world? Not so simple. Not so simple. Voshim say that if you want the reward of a mitzvah in the next world, if you want to live in the next world, you have to do the mitzvah in the next world. You have to do the mitzvah in the transcendent world. It's not good doing a mitzvah for a selfish reason over here and expecting reward over there. If you live here, then they pay you out here in a certain sense. Let me give you an example. Stay with me now. It's a fascinating question. Sounds tremendously unfair. That's a fundamental of Jewish belief. It says the following thing. It says that some people, this is not our subject tonight, but it's a way to understand the question. Some people can be very righteous in this world, they can suffer terribly. But that's an old fundamental problem at the basis of the whole question of religion. And some people can be very negative and they can have a wonderful time over here. So we've discussed different aspects of this question before, and there are many different approaches which are all true. But one dimension that fits into tonight's subject is the following thing. One dimension only. I'm not saying that this covers the whole spectrum of the question. There's much more to understand. But one thing is as follows. One of the reasons that you get the opposite pattern than what you'd expect. In other words, people might be very righteous and yet suffer, and vice versa. One of the fundamental reasons, and the Rambam mentions it, is this. When a person's very righteous, but he did something wrong, he's done something wrong somewhere, even the most righteous individual is not perfect. Right? The Gemara says, I think, that there are only four individuals who are so perfect they never sinned ever. Right? Four people who never ever sinned and died only because of what Adam HaRishon had done. Right? Now you think you... I guess you think one of those four is left blank for you to fill your name in. Chances are, it's very difficult, right? See, we have statements to the effect that no one's perfect, everyone makes a mistake. Now, what happens to the mistakes? Since the world is judged on a basis of strict accounting, there has to be payment. There has to be payment, right? You have to feel the consequence of what you did wrong. Even though overall, you might definitely belong in what's called the next world, but somehow you have to pay for the places where you made an expense and you didn't bring on the goods. So there's a special hamhaga, that's a special kindness of Hashem, that what he does, he gives suffering in this world, so that in the essential dimension, which is the next world, you don't have to pay at all. Since the payment over there is forever, basically, with certain mystical comments that might change it, but basically, since it's an eternal existence in which a person can't change, again with a few exceptions, basically, since it's eternal and unchanging, so the biggest punishment imaginable would be any kind of suffering over there. And we have Gemaras where Tanoim took on sufferings in this world. They didn't hurt themselves, but they davened that they should suffer in this world. The most intense degree of suffering, on the off chance that they'd done something that wasn't perfect, rather than take a chance of suffering there. Right? You have a Gemara about Rebbe Elazar ben Shimon, in which he did something that later proved to be correct, and he had proof that it was correct. But just because there may have been some vested interest in it, he took on the most intense torture for years. It says that they used to carry away from under his bed in the morning buckets of fat that oozed out of his wounds. And then in the morning he used to say to his sufferings, go. He had to learn Torah. The sufferings went and the day was fine. But at night when he wasn't learning, he used to suffer intense suffering. Why? And a masochist. A man of intense balance. But he did it because rather than take the faintest chance of suffering in the next world, that's worth years of torture in this world. A lot more to say about that as well. But what's our understanding? That a person would rather pay here because to be perfect where it's a perfect world. This is a flash of an eye, this world. Now, this world is nothing. Be careful, this world is everything. But you only get there because of this world. Now that eternity is an extended, eternal version of what you did here. Make no mistake. You only get there by via here. Now, you've got to enter the corridor to get into the hall. You've got to go through, no question about it. Not saying it's... But in eternal terms, it's a flash of an eye. Where's your past? I can't help the Rosh Hashanah to think about this. Where's your past right now? However old you are. But if you're 18 or below, you can forget about this question because you actually believe you're going to be here forever and you actually think you're open. Nothing I say will make any difference. But once you hit 30, and certainly 35, from 35 on, men, especially men, women depend, men from 35 on hit the most intense depression. If you haven't experienced it yourself, ask your wife if you reach 35. She knows about it. Because men at age 35 suddenly realize that the whole thing's only 70 and you're on the way down from now on in. And you actually haven't done anything like what you dreamed of doing when you're 18. Right? And it's an intense problem to cope with. Right? The problem gets more severe when you're 50. So the problem is this. That the core of it, the core of the anxiety, is that when you're 35 and you look back, you don't see 35 years. You don't see a wisp of smoke. Your whole past is a figment of some electrochemical activity in your brain called memory. But where is it in reality? I'm not trying to depress you before Rosh Hashanah, when it's supposed to be inspiration. But you have to think about that. When a person's 120, they have the same experience. The wisp of what memory is when you're 120 doesn't seem any longer. Doesn't occupy any larger a place in the mind than when you're 30. So that's it's a wink of an eye, it's nothing. Even your experience of the present is slipping away so fast you can't ever hold on to it. So therefore, it's worth going through what you have to pay here rather than have to pay there. But that's a real existence, and that's just a dream compared to the next world. It's better to have a bad dream, let's put it that way. It's better to have an agonizingly bad dream, right? And then wake up, it's fine. But to have a nice dream and then wake up, right, and be suffering, that's a terrible agony. That's unbearable. Now, so therefore there's a special kindness that Hashem pays out. There's many other benefits to this process in the world also, which is not our subject tonight. We have to discuss it another time. But that's one dimension of this situation. Now. But here comes the problem. What about somebody who's very negative in this world? Very, very evil in this world. Totally black. So even the biggest, the blackest individual in this world does something right somewhere. But since he's so negative and so black that he's given up the next world, that he's totally taken himself out of an eternal dimension, right? So he's not going to get that dimension. He's going to be denied that I'm talking about somebody very negative. He's going to be denied that dimension entirely. But for the good things that he's done, deserves payment. And it says, Hashem elam mekapech schar kol beria. He doesn't withhold the reward of any creature. So where is this person going to get paid out? He gets paid out here. So they take this negative individual who's going to some place where there's no place, and here they give him yachts on the Caribbean and women all over the place and whatever he wants, because he gets paid out. He gets intense pleasure in this world, genuine pleasure in this world. Now. But the problem is as follows. If you think about it carefully, you'll see it seems tremendously unfair. Because if that, let's understand, you with me still? Let's understand carefully. If this person deserves the next world and he's done something bad, so you could punish him in the dimension of unreality, and you could punish him here. So he gets punished over here. I understand. But if a person's been negative, and you want to pay him his rewards here, that's not fair. Because the positive things that he did are also mitzvahs. He did a positive thing called the mitzvah. We've just made a whole speech this evening explaining why mitzvahs only belong in the transcendent world. So what kind of deal is it? You follow me? What kind of deal is it to pay him out here? You hear the problem? So he's done a tiny mitzvah someplace. But we just understood that the tiniest mitzvah is worth much, much more than they can fit into this world. So what's Hashem doing? Where's the fairness in it? That for the little mitzvah this person did, he gets paid out here. This is worth nothing. And I mean, you hear the problem? Very unfair. The answer's not so easy. You need to understand. It's not so easy to accept. The answer is, they can only pay you out in the next world if you have a next world. You follow? Only if you put yourself in there can they give you all this reward over there. Sure, mitzvah's worth that, but that's if you do it there. But this individual sold that. He doesn't have a place for them to pay him out there. He substituted this for that. His total reality is this place. All he wants is this. That's the total expanse of his being. He chose that. So where are they going to pay him out? You follow? Not that it's unfair that Hashem doesn't want to give him his true reward, but he's thrown it away. He doesn't have that place anymore. The total definition of his reality is what he is. Yes, Hashem gives it to him. What more can he give him? You follow? Remarkable thing. What you see from this is this, that it depends how you do a mitzvah. It depends where you're holding with a mitzvah. You know, you can't, it's not simply that a mitzvah is worth infinite value. So you do a mitzvah, automatically you get infinity. It depends where you do the mitzvah. If you do the mitzvah in the infinite dimension, so then you get paid in infinite. But if you do the mitzvah in the finite dimension, but it can't, it's just, you've got to, everything's paid according to the same currency. Everything's paid in kind. We understand from this that if a person does a mitzvah because he wants some benefit here, so get some benefit here. But it's a raw deal doing the mitzvah because you want some pleasure here or some benefit here because it'll make you more acceptable or more popular or richer or some other thing, you know, and expecting infinite reward. The concept of a mitzvah is to reach into the infinite dimension. The concept is to bring yourself into that dimension where you're reaching for infinity. That kind of a mitzvah has an ongoing reality in that kind of thing. But a person does a mitzvah, by the way, happens to be a mitzvah, but he's doing it because he's motivated for himself. So his own motivation doesn't go beyond himself. If you don't go beyond the self, your whole next world is where you went beyond the self. You never went beyond your own being, beyond your own self. So where are they going to pay you out? You first have to build that place. It's a remarkable thing. I'll tell you a frightening version of this. After at least some time to say some happy things. But let's understand this. The Masilis Yishon says the following fascinating thing. Path of the Just, a great Musa work, right? A classical central work of self-development in Jewish thinking. Says this. He says, a person should try and do a mitzvah lishmo. That means for Hashem's sake, not for you. Should try and do a mitzvah because you extend yourself like I've been saying. Extend yourself beyond yourself and not do it for you. Not do it selfishly, but do it because you, not for the reward. Not for the reward, do it for Hashem. Move beyond yourself, move out, right? Become, reach that level of maturity. Not where you're doing it because you want something. Not even the next world. Do it totally motivated beyond the self. What's called a chassid. That means to go out. Right? Not just to live up to obligations, but to go beyond the self. That's what a person should do. Then he says, but it's very, very difficult. That's very, very difficult to do a mitzvah like that. So what happens to the person who does a mitzvah with his own vested interest, he doesn't get any reward. So he says this. He says, no, a person also gets a reward. He even gets a reward in the next world. Even if you do a mitzvah with the intention of your own benefit, you still get reward in the next world. Why? And he quotes the following words. Because Hashem, Eino mekapach schar kol beria. Hashem doesn't withhold the due reward of any creature. But I heard my Rebbe say the following thing. Frightening idea. Those words sound very nice. Hashem pays you out in the next world because he doesn't withhold the reward of any living being, of any creature. But those words are loaded with such power that if you understand, if anyone knows any Chumash, if you know where those words come from, it makes you go cold. Because where those words are used in Torah literature are in the following place. You know where it says this principle? Where does it say in Chazal that Hashem doesn't withhold the reward of any creature? Where does it say that? Does it say by some great tzaddik who extended, does it say by Avraham Avinu when Abraham was prepared to sacrifice his son? Or he withstood 10 tremendous tests? Does it say that Hashem paid him because he doesn't withhold the reward? It doesn't say it. Do you know where it says it? It says that when the Jews left Egypt, the dogs didn't bark at them. And a yechrat kelev l'shoina, a dog, didn't bark, doesn't move his tongue to bark, and because the dogs didn't bark, they were given a reward. What is the reward? That they get thrown the bones, they get a certain, the Torah prescribes a certain reward that dogs get. So there it says, Chazal say, you see what happens? That Hashem, Adam HaKapel, Chalkol Beri, a dog did a good thing, the dogs didn't bark when they could have, so they get an eternal reward that the Torah, they get thrown the bone. You hear what the Masilat Yesharim is saying to you? You hear what he's saying? He's saying that when you do a mitzvah, not for Hashem's sake, you do a mitzvah for your sake. A dog has a very, very, very low level of free choice. But the human degree of free choice that a dog can raise himself to in spiritual terms, that is very, very low. If it exists at all. And despite that, he gets a reward. The dog who isn't free to do different, raised himself to the point where he once could have barked and didn't. And that almost entirely involuntary level is prescribed an intense reward from the Torah. But can you imagine the reward for a human who struggles with himself and brings himself to that level correctly? But, despite that, the dog gets a reward. So says, Mr. Shalom is telling you this, when you do a mitzvah for your sake and not for Hashem's, sure you get a reward in the next world, but you know how much reward? To sell you a bond. They give you the reward. He doesn't use those words accidentally. He means that you'll get a reward, but you must know what kind. True, he's talking about the next world, and it's in proportion to what the next world is. No one's denying that. But it's ain't a dame that can't be compared, spoken of in the same breath, as a person who does a mitzvah in the next world. Not just accidentally happens to be a mitzvah, but he does it out of motivation. Let's understand one more dimension of this thing. More positive note. There's a debate in the Chachamim on the following point. Very, very fascinating Gemara. The Gemara asks the following psychological mechanistic problem. Wants to know the following thing. Gemara says this. Who's greater? Someone who does something because he's commanded to do it? Or someone who does something because he spontaneously wishes to do it but he's not commanded? Who's greater? That means, let's understand carefully. That means, the question is, if a person gets up and does something because they're totally self-motivated, they want to express the depth of their personality, not total explosion of self-motivation, they get up and do the thing, right? That's one type of action. Then there's another action that you do because you're forced, you're commanded. Hashem says, I want you to do this and this and this, and you do it. Right? No spontaneous motivation, no spark of motivation at all, self-motivation. Which is greater? There's little doubt, right, about what the common wisdom would say. That a spontaneous action where you generate your own, you get up and do it, and you put yourself into it, and the Gemara says, not at all. Not at all. Somebody who's commanded, what's called a mitzvah ba'aseh, is much greater, than someone who's not commanded. That means, again, someone who does a mitzvah, a positive action, because he's commanded to do it, he's given an order, is at a much higher level than someone who does a thing spontaneously. Now that's very hard to understand. What's the understanding of? Now, again, it's not our entire subject tonight, and many answers have been given, which are fascinating and beautiful. I'm not going to go into any detail. One answer is the fact that when you do things spontaneously, it's a very deep answer to this, and connects to our subject. When you do things spontaneously, you don't have to overcome any negativity. because what you want to do, you do. It might be a great action, and it might take, you might put a lot of energy into it, but basically you want to do it, right? You have this feeling that you want to do the thing. So you get up and you do the thing. But you don't overcome anything. But as soon as you're commanded to do something, your first reaction is, don't tell me what to do. Your first reaction, right, is your own sense of independence. I do what I want to do. I don't. You have to overcome that. You have to overcome the resistance. That's a remarkable effort that you have to make, that you don't do in a spontaneous action. And then many other levels. Another level is, many other levels. Another level, I'll give an example, along the same lines, when you do a thing spontaneously, you only do what you want to do. Let's say he's visiting the sick. So a person who visits the sick because he has a tremendous altruistic drive. But he really visits the people he wants to visit. And he does it when he feels like. But all the sick people might need to be visited won't get visited that way. Whereas if you do it because it's a command, you do it where the need is because you have to do it there. So in terms of what the Jewish people will benefit from, the world will benefit, they're much more effective that way. There are many different levels. But this, the idea that we want to understand this evening is this. Much deeper than all this, much, much deeper, is the following idea. Very deep mystical idea, worth struggling to understand. When a person does something spontaneously, the greatest spontaneous act that a person could generate, where they put absolutely every fiber of their being into that action, that could never be more than what you are. Because even if you put your entire being into it, so then what you've just done is expressed your entire being. That's fine, but you could never transcend. You can't be more than what you are. You can't pull yourself up by your own hair. You can't go out beyond your own being. You can't climb out there. You're not there. So if you do a mitzvah, totally spontaneously generate, and you lift yourself from the core of your being into that mitzvah, and you put yourself into it, and you do it, what comes out of that mitzvah is exactly what you are, which is wonderful and great. But it's not more than what you are. But when you do a mitzvah because you commanded, that means that you carry out a mitzvah that comes from an infinite source. The beginning of that mitzvah wasn't the top of your being. It was what's called the Ratzon Hashem. Instead of being your desire that motivated that mitzvah, the motivation for that mitzvah was Hashem's desire. And then it came down through the mystical world, and you completed it. You just switched on. You made yourself part of a circuit. You locked into reality that begins at the core of existence. You just became part of the cosmic reality. You just became, you hear what's going on here? When you do a mitzvah because you have to understand, when a mitzvah is commanded, what it means is, you have to understand the mechanism. The mechanism is, the mystics put it the most fascinating way, the Sfas Emes describes it in detail. He says, we've mentioned this before, he says this, a mitzvah works the following way. Hashem says to himself, if we can talk this way, he has a desire for that thing to be done. That's called the Ratzon Hashem. The Ratzon Hashem, you know, we can't talk this way in those worlds, in that level. But in the human level, Ratzon, as we've discussed many times, your desire is the highest aspect of your being. Everything else is just the way you go about carrying out what you want. But the core of what you want is the beginning, right, of what you are. There's nothing that's prior to what you want. And even if you want it because you want something else, but ultimately you've got to get to something that you want because you want it. The core of what you are is called Ratzon. We mentioned before, that's why the word Ratzon in Gematria is Makor, which means the source, and it's Gematria Shmoy, Hashem's name, right? And the word Ratzon, the Medaktikim say, is based on the word Rat, which means the beginning of movement, to start movement. So Ratzon means the beginning of anything. The highest point of the human is your Ratzon. And of course, as we discussed many times before, that's why the way to work on yourself is to work on what you want, not on how you go about getting what you want. There's just this pathway or that pathway. To change who you are, like we said last week, you have to want something different. Now, where does the mitzvah begin? In what Hashem wants. Like, we're an image of Hashem. We're a demus and a telem. We reflect His structure, whatever that means, if we can talk that way. But the mitzvah begins in the highest level that we can think about, and in truth, we're not allowed to think about it too much, but at that level is what's called the Ratzon Hashem. The Ratzon Hashem means what Hashem wants before He starts doing it. That Ratzon Hashem starts happening in the world. He brings it down to all the spiritual worlds. He starts to actualize His Ratzon. How far does He go with doing what He wants? He stops at you. Instead of doing that thing in the world, He gets down as far as a human, and He says, please do me a favor, this is your mitzvah, complete the action for me. I want this and this and this built in the world, in the physical world, in the spiritual world, and I want you to do it. Remarkable thing. That means when Hashem wants something done in the world, He doesn't complete the circuit. He doesn't fill the pathway. He starts moving down that pathway, but before He gets what He wants, He asks you to go. How do you do it for Him? Asay ritzoincha ritzoinai. You have to make your will His will. That means, you hear this? It's an incredible thing. When you do a mitzvah, the first thing you have to do is you have to make yourself want what he wants. The first thing you have to do is make yourself an image of what he is. Just like he wants this thing done all the way down, you step in at that point where he stops, where you begin, and you have to make what he wants what you want. So the first thing is, you follow, you start reflecting exactly the way he was. And then you start carrying it out and you finish it in the world. The difference is that when he was the beginning and all the way down to the last step, you the last step, you the end. What this means is, if you think about it for 2 minutes, you realize that the reality is what Hashem wants and does. But what Hashem does in the world is only up to you. If you do it, it gets done. But that's reality. That completes what Hashem is and does. So when you do what Hashem wants, you just become part of reality. You become part of the cosmic reality. No less than that. That's what it means when you do a mitzvah. Just happen to eat matzah, right, the right amount of matzah on the right date. That's the least of it. What happens when you do that is you complete what he started, an incredible thing, and you become one with what he is. You understand, of course, what happens when you don't do a mitzvah. When you don't do a mitzvah that you should, or when you break something, what you do is you just step out of reality. You step out of what's real. Because he doesn't want that thing. So it doesn't exist in the spiritual world. It never began in the spiritual world. That's not part of reality. By definition, it's part of your illusion. There is no such thing in the world. You just spent an incredibly valuable half hour of your life, which will never come again, engaged in something that doesn't exist at all. It doesn't exist in the illusion. So when it's revealed as reality, when you get to what's called the next world, it just won't be there. There'll be half an hour of your, you know, the dying man would give for another half hour. Anything, everything. You'll experience half an hour that just isn't there. It'll be half an hour of the 120 years of your being that's been ripped out. But the half hour that you spend doing what he wants you to do is experience where you became him. You became part of him. And it says, Asirin Tzadikim Lihikare Al Shmei Shel Hashem. That Tzadikim are going to be called by Hashem's name. It means they'll be part of that world. You with me? So again, the answer to the question of why it's greater to do a thing because you're commanded is that you do it as the completion of a command that begins in the cosmic infinite source. So you become part of that. There's no comparison between functioning that way and functioning with what you want to do. Even if it's a good action. And even if it's the totality of your being, but it never goes beyond you. Whereas the smallest mitzvah goes all the way, that's clear. Clear? Now, what have we said so far? Let's understand. Let's summarize. We said that reward is only the next world. Reward here is only a technical means to continue earning the next world. That's what we said. Reward in the next world, or existence, experience of the next world, has a proviso that although you can get there technically in some way, you can get thrown your bug, even though you have self-motivated interest, but you really generate it by putting yourself there. You can only get to the transcendent world if you learn how to transcend. That's a meditational and transcendent exercise. I'm not saying it's easy. It's very, very difficult to do what's called pure chesed. That means to move beyond the self. I think I mentioned to you the story that illustrates it beautifully. Beautiful story that illustrates this point. And we'll leave it. We'll leave this point with this illustration. Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, one of the great Hasidic masters. So one year, there was no Lulav and Esrog. I mentioned this a few Sundays ago. There was no Lulav and Esrog in town. And in the whole surroundings, they couldn't find a Lulav and Esrog for Sukkot. So the Hasidim combed the countryside, and they tried to find the Abba Menim to use for Sukkot. They couldn't find. Finally, they found a traveler who had a beautiful set. A man who was traveling through, on his way home to the town where he lived, he had a beautiful set of Lulav and Esrog, and the Hasidim offered him whatever he wanted for this thing, for their Rebbe, for the mitzvah. And they doubled the price, and they doubled it again, and he wasn't selling. He was on his way home, he wasn't interested. Finally, they convinced him to come in and see the Rebbe. So he came in to see Rav Levi Yitzchak, and he discussed the question with him, and Rav Levi offered him whatever he wanted, offered him a list. Finally, the man said, had an idea. He said the following thing. He said, Rebbe, I'll tell you this. Just do that. I'll tell it. But the price I want is every bit of the reward that you're going to get in the next world should go to me. You can have my mitzvah. You can do my mitzvah. You can have my mitzvah. I won't do it. But you sell me. You sign away to me all the eternal existence and every drop of the great and wonderful reward that a man like you can generate in the next world goes to me. Immediately and instantaneously, the Rebbe said, definitely done, and he sold it. And he bought. So after the Hasidim said to him, but Rebbe, what kind of deal is that? The whole point of a mitzvah is what it generates in the next world. The whole point of the mitzvah, for you, you're not doing it for selfish reasons, like we've been discussing. The whole point of the mitzvah is where it takes you in the spiritual world. Right? That's why you're here, to generate the next world. That's the only reason you want the mitzvah, and you just sold that. Rebbe says, then you don't understand. All my life I've longed to be able to do a mitzvah purely for Hashem's sake, but I should get nothing out of it. Now here's my chance. That's what he craved. He wanted a mitzvah specifically without the reward. Of course, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that for that there must be a tremendous reward. But he sold that too. Yeah. Now let's look at the final dimension that we began with. And that's as follows. Also a wonderful, wonderful idea that most people don't know. We mentioned in the beginning that there was another category of reward in this world. And that is for mitzvahs between man and man. Right? Between people. If a person does mitzvahs between man and man, then there's reward in this world. It says, Adam oichel perisei malam azeh, v'kerin keyemes lalam haba. You eat the fruits in this world, that's definitely reward. The whole concept of tree, right? The whole concept of a fruit is the reward. That's the what bears fruit here. But the capital remains, the essential reward, remains for the next world. Now, let's understand as follows. You know that there are only two categories of mitzvahs, okay? There's only two, all mitzvahs are divided into two categories, from this perspective. That is mitzvahs between man and Hashem, and mitzvahs between Adam b'chaveru, between us and other people. Now, why is it that there's reward in this world for mitzvahs between us and other people? Why does it say that? What's the concept? So briefly, the idea is as follows. The way to approach it is this. We mentioned this in the beginning. And that is this. Why is there a difference in the first place between mitzvahs that you do between you and Hashem and mitzvahs that you do between you and your friend? The ultimate reason you do a mitzvah is because Hashem commanded. Just like we tried to discuss now. You do a mitzvah because Hashem commanded you. So what's the difference if the mitzvah is shaking a lulav and esrog or giving your friend something he needs? The only reality in the world is Hashem's reality. You do a mitzvah only because he wants it. Are you with me? What's the difference? We don't distinguish between shaking a lulav or sitting in a sukkah. That, those are two mitzvahs that we do because Hashem wants. We're not even aware of the rewards. Exactly how that balances. So why is there a different category when it comes to mitzvahs between you and your friend? You're doing that only because of the Tzelem Elokim in him and because Hashem commands you to do that mitzvah. Yeah. So why are there different categories and totally different pathways, different rewards? The answer to this, the fundamental point that most people misunderstand very, very, very wrongly, badly. That's this. This is a very frum Yetzirah. It's a very frum way of doing things wrong. I'm talking about people who really try. And that's this. They think that doing a mitzvah with another person is entirely between you and Hashem. That's definitely not correct. If you do a mitzvah with another human being, thinking only of Hashem, it's not what he wants. The concept of a mitzvah between you and another person is to understand that he's another human being. So understand, of course, the ultimate derivation of his greatness is the Tzelem Elokim in him. There's no question about it. But the point is that many people who think they're being very frum, they forget about the other person. They do the mitzvah because of Hashem's sake, and they forget the mensch that's involved. As one great Hasidic Rebbe said, I don't want to be your lulav, I don't want to be your esrog. They go, a frum person can go visit someone who's sick and handle him like an esrog. And the sicker he is, the more mahuda, you understand? The sicker he is, the more better the mitzvah. He's a real mahuda dika esrog, if he's really suffering. You hear what's going on? Because he's a chayfetz of your mitzvah. He's the object of your mitzvah. But that's not what Hashem wants. The first exercise in this parsha is to learn that he's a human being. But apart from doing the mitzvah because Hashem commanded, there's an extra dimension. You follow? You don't shake an esrog, shake your friend. It's not the concept. The concept is to shake esrog because between you and Hashem, you keep Shabbos that way. But when you go and help a friend, you give him a smile, you give him something he needs, you feed him, you go visit him when he's sick. The concept is that behind the scenes you're doing it because you command it, because Hashem makes you do this. But you've got to train yourself to the point where you see him as so chashuv and with such divine spark that you couldn't do any different. I'll give you a fascinating example that takes place in the tshuva world. Okay, this is for the Balei Tshuva. This is for people who didn't grow up frum, and they became involved in the Torah way of life. I'll share with you a fascinating problem that many I've experienced and many other people have experienced. And it's like this. You might not have thought of it in crystallized terms, but when I put it to you, I think you'll recognize it. Many people have had the following experience. Before they were religious, they lived a certain way of life. They had ideals, they had morals, they had principles. They lived a certain way of life. They were positive people. After they became involved in Yiddishkeit, they suddenly find that a lot of the spark has gone out of a lot of things. For example, when they get involved in certain mitzvahs, they can't generate the emotion that they had before. Why? Because before, when they did the mitzvah, they did it spontaneously. When they went to visit somebody who was sick, or they gave somebody something they needed, they felt it was a total dedication of themselves. Now they feel they're doing it by rot. You do it because you have to. You're commanded. You're going there because the rules say so. You don't feel anything. I don't know if you felt this problem, but it's a tremendous problem. And it leads to tremendous insincerity. Here's this person sick and he hears you knock on the door. He knows and you know that you're there because you have to be there. Huh? He lives in your community. You're part of his community. He happens to be sick. The rule book says that right now is Bikur Chayim. Right? And you're doing it according to all the rules. You don't go in the first 3 days, and if you're this age, and if you know a whole lot of rules. So he knows that you don't feel anything for him. I'm thinking about him. Right? If you're thinking about anything spiritual, you're thinking about how you've devoted to Hashem by this mitzvah. So he knows that, and you know it. So where's the human contact? You hear the question? A very, very, very difficult issue for people who... But of course the answer is this. I once asked a great man about this also. And he answered me as follows. The object of the mitzvah is not to do it by the rules. The object of the mitzvah is to train yourself into transcendence. The object of the mitzvah is to make you that kind of person. The mitzvah is only the bones of the thing that gets you to do the thing. But you put the heart into it. The mitzvah is just, you with me? The mitzvah is just the bare skin and bones that get you into that situation. But it's up to you to put the fire into it. The difference, you could do the mitzvah in a dead way. You could go there looking at your watch all the time and not thinking about him. You could do that. So that'll get you something else, now you're bound for that. But the core of the mitzvah, the heart of the mitzvah, is to feel his suffering and to experience what he's going through and to put yourself in. The idea of the mitzvah is to do it so intensely and to train yourself in it so intensely that if you wanted, you couldn't resist. You have to get yourself to the point where when you see that man suffering, you couldn't help but help him. You wouldn't even remember that it's a commandment. That should be your problem. I once had that experience. I once was very sick. And a Rosh Hashiva came to visit me. It was my Rosh Hashiva. So when he knocked, I was just new. I was new in the whole thing. When he knocked on the door, I said to myself, I was feeling very bitter. And I said to myself, he's coming to visit me because he has to. He doesn't care about me. He's going to sit here for a few, no question about it. And he knows it, and I know it, and it's totally insincere. The whole thing's a mess. From the moment he walked in, there was such a glow. There was such a feeling of warmth. There was such genuineness to it. And I was trying to find a fault. I wasn't trying to enjoy it. I was trying to see when he was going to try and slip out and how he wasn't thinking about me at all. But it was so obvious that he trained himself to be the kind of person that cares about other people because he's trained himself to care about them, that it doesn't begin to compare with that old spontaneity which is really only selfishness. Because the most spontaneous action in the world of a person is because they enjoy that kind of spontaneity. It's a remarkable thing. The only way to get to true chesed, that means truly going beyond yourself, is when it's built on the basis of an obligation, and then you train yourself to put spontaneity into the obligation. That's what it means to do a mitzvah. That's what it is. Now, with that in mind, you can understand why there's reward, one dimension of why there's reward between you when you do a mitzvah between you and someone else. And the idea is this. If the mitzvah between you and your friend was just another version of a mitzvah between you and Hashem, he was just another Esrei, so then the only reward would be in the next world. But because there's a dimension of that mensch which is here in this world, and you put that part of your neshama into that part of the mitzvah, so that's Kedusha in this world. You hear? So for that you could get a reward. Isn't that beautiful? For that you could get a reward in this world. Where are you doing the mitzvah with him because it's a mitzvah? Definitely that's kind of tremendous, acquires tremendous reward in the world to come. There's no question about it. Like any other mitzvah. No less than any other mitzvah. But there's an incredible extra dimension here. And that extra dimension is that he's not in the next world. He's here right now. And you're not putting yourself into him because of the next world. You're putting yourself into him for his sake and devoted and conscious of what he is. Well, that deserves reward here. Because every mitzvah is rewarded in the way you do it. If you put reward into the next world, you get reward there. If you do a mitzvah only for this world, you don't get much of it there. If you put effort into somebody else, that's a genuine transcendence of yourself, and you transcend here, which is what other people are here for in your life, to teach that, so then there's tremendous reward.